You are tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Mike Murphy. I'm filling in for Tom Clymer this morning on Tell Somebody. Today we look at governing under the influence. I have on the phone Kevin Rutledge with the American Friends Service Committee in Iowa, and their project follows candidates around and introduces issues into the campaign that otherwise might not make it there. Good morning, Kevin. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me on the show, Mike.
Oh, sure. So thanks for being here this morning. So first of all, governing under the influence, what does that mean?
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny little catchphrase. So if you think of driving under the influence of someone as, you know, intoxicated under alcohol, in the same way our country's lawmakers are under the influence of money in politics. So if you think of corporate money or super PACs, lobbyists, special interest groups, you know, there's all this money in the political system, and so they're governing under the influence of money rather than, like, the American people. So some of our issues were talking to presidential candidates about in Iowa and New Hampshire, the two early caucus and primary states, about is how these private corporations are driving public policies, especially war and incarceration policies. So some of our issues also include the military-industrial complex, the $1 trillion nuclear weapons plan, private prisons and immigrant detention centers, and how these corporations who profit from these policies are spending millions of dollars on campaign donations and lobbying, and examples of the revolving door to get more profits at the expense of the American people.
Okay, so are you a native Iowan, Kevin?
Yeah, I grew up in Iowa. I'm from Ottumwa, Iowa. I've lived there since I was 4 years old, and then I went to Iowa State University, graduated in sociology and criminal justice, and yeah, for about the past almost year and a half now, we've just been out talking with all these presidential candidates and training people to ask them questions as well.
I want to get into some of that and ask you about your interactions with individual candidates, but I'm curious whether you have an assessment of how this year compares to 4 years ago or 8 years ago?
Well, I would have just graduated high school and went to my first year of college back in 2008. So I voted, but I wasn't in part of the caucus process then, so I can't speak too much for that. And then in 2012, I just came back from South America. I studied abroad down there. So, but this election, I know that there's way more money in politics than ever before, and people are sick of it. You know, there's, I think I saw somewhere about $5 billion are being spent in this 2016 election alone, and a lot of that is on, you know, campaign ads and super PACs, and, you know, people are just being pulled every which direction or being told what to do or who to vote for or who not to vote for or what to think, and so there's a lot of money that's floating around, as everybody can tell who's been paying attention.
The reason I asked that, yesterday I was speaking to Ursula Rudenberg, who's the manager of the community radio station in Ames, Iowa, KHOI.
Well, yeah, we've been on there a few times.
Yeah, she said that. She said you guys are great. And but she said, like, this has been, like, a more hectic year. Like, it seems Iowa is more inundated this year than in previous presidential years. And I don't know whether because things it seems like, in general, this election season started earlier. They seem to start earlier and earlier. So I don't know if that's what it is. But she said to me, you know, after next Monday, Iowa turns back into a pumpkin, which I thought was pretty funny. So I'm looking at the AFSC has a website. AFSC is the American Friends Service Committee, which is a Quaker organization. And in the interest of full disclosure, I serve not only on the local Kansas City Program Committee, but I'm part of the Midwest Region Executive Committee as well, and that's what actually brought you guys to my attention. Was I met you in Des Moines a while back, and so I'm looking at the website gui.afsc.org, all about candidate appearances, and I see a call posted yesterday asking people to tweet the moderators of the next GOP debate in Iowa, and that's tonight, right?
It's tonight, yeah. It starts at 8 p.m.
So they're asking people to tweet, and I guess it's hashtag GOP debate is the handle about the governing under the influence project. You can encourage the debate moderators to ask candidates about excessive political influence of the military-industrial complex and the for-profit industry. That's just a couple things about on that page. Very interesting page. So why don't we start with, well, let's start since I can at least count them on one hand, the Democratic candidates. Hillary Clinton, what kind of interactions have you folks had with Hillary?
Well, with Hillary Clinton, she was one of the first candidates that we had talked to. Actually, that was like a big success story for us. So we started this project back in October of 2014. Well, the first candidate that we had talked to was Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire, because we spent a week up there for training on all these issues and like how to talk to candidates. So that was exciting. But just a couple weeks later, I was at Scattered Good Friends School, which is a Quaker boarding school in West Branch, just outside of Iowa City. And I did a presentation there about our issues. The next day, Hillary Clinton was there in Cedar Rapids, so 45 minutes away. Had some students and staff interested in coming with me. And one high school student was able to ask her a question about the immigrant detention quota of 34,000 immigrants, which are required to be detained every single day. And a majority of those are in for-profit prisons, and they spend millions lobbying on that.
So we're all on the same page, there is a mandatory quota of how many immigrants must be detained by law, right?
It gets a little fuzzy, but what it is is it's in the Department of Homeland Security's budget, and so there's money adequate to be spent to detain about 34,000 immigrants every day. So, like, nobody really knows about this policy, or nobody really knew about it before. So we've been really successful in lifting this issue and this message to presidential candidates. And when we ask these questions, we educate the candidate, we educate the audience, and the media as well. And sometimes we have banners, our 7-foot banners, outside of events, so we're educating people outside and handing out these questions. There's this policy that nobody knows about. And we've been successful in getting the attention of the Democrats with this, and they've taken stances, and they're against it. And same with some of the Republicans, too. But so with Hillary, this high school student had talked with her, asked her this question, and she said, wow, nobody's ever asked me that question before. I'll look into it. And that was, you know, almost a year and a half ago. And then several months later, then she finally came out during a immigration policy speech and was saying, you know, almost word for word, how these detention centers, you know, need to be closed down because these for-profit prisons are, you know, driving policies, this and that. So that was a cool experience, especially when, it's a 16-year-old talking to a presidential candidate.
That's great. Kevin, I think we have your colleague Hector on the phone. Are you there, Hector?
I am here. It took me a little bit, but I figured it out, and I am here with you, and I'm excited to have a conversation with you.
Oh, that's great. And Hector, your last name is Salamanca?
Salamanca Arroyo.
All right. And so thanks for joining us this morning. And Kevin was just telling us about, I started just going through candidates. We just got to the first one, Hillary. I just wondered about interactions. Kevin just shared with us a really good success story about how the issue of mandatory detention quotas for immigrants got introduced into, at least into Hillary Clinton's world, and how that really changed things. And as Kevin just mentioned, the fact that it was through the voice of a 16-year-old high school student, that makes it all the more sweeter. I'm sure that has to be great for you guys. And so that's really good. And it's, just one more thing to clear up about the issue itself, about these mandatory detention quotas. So this is not people who have been here for years being rounded up. This is people who are trying to come across the border now that are being detained in these facilities?
I believe it's all of the above. And I know in Iowa, well, across the country, there's also, you know, since Christmas time or so, a lot more of the immigration raids that are happening. So, but like people who are in these detention centers, you know, they may stay there for up to over a year. And so this costs about $2 billion to taxpayers. So it's expensive. They treat people inhumanely. You know, malnutrition, people die in there, breaking up families. It's just a whole mess.
It's especially tragic once you realize that these detention centers are also holding small children. And we had a colleague from Arizona who was telling us one of the detention centers in her area was trying to get a permission to be certified as a daycare because they have such a large number of small children that are inside these detention centers.
Wow. And that's just one issue that you were able to get, like, introduced and really, you know, have an influence really on widening the spectrum of what's within what gets into the national discussion. So let's go to anything else you wanted to say about interactions with Hillary Clinton before we move on?
Yeah, I had also talked with her a few weeks back about this $1 trillion nuclear weapons plan that the Obama administration had put forward. And I asked her if she would oppose this plan, which would enrich these rich Pentagon contractors and set off a new global arms race. And so I had it on video, and she said, yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. I need to look into it more. But anyways, a journalist from The Intercept, he picked it up and put a story about that and about us asking questions to other candidates about that, including Marco Rubio and Martin O'Malley, and a little more about the issue. So that was something that was really exciting as well, and just lifting that into the presidential message during the election time.
Well, all right. Well, that's great. So, all right. What about Bernie Sanders? What kind of interactions have you had with him?
So he's getting a little hard to talk to as of more recently because his crowds have been much bigger. But when we first talked to him in New Hampshire, we asked him about the F-35, which is this most expensive weapon system in the history of mankind. It's cost $400 billion. It's expected to cost $1.5 trillion. It's these fighter jets, and so it's so intricate and complicated how many corporations are involved in that whole mix and how much they're influencing these politicians to make sure this program lives, even though, like, it still doesn't fly and shoot properly after 15, 20 years. But they're being made in his home state, so we had asked him about that. He said he wanted jobs, you know, for people in his state. But we've asked him other questions about immigrant detention as well, and he's been vocal against those policies. Hector, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, we had a volunteer attend a roundtable who was able to ask him about the $1 trillion nuclear plan to modernize nuclear weapons and whatnot, and he spoke forcefully against it. So this was, we've had mostly my opinion, positive interactions with Bernie Sanders. And although his events are now getting harder and harder to ask questions, we have been able to successfully post questions to him that push him on these policies that we're trying to get addressed.
So just to get back to the issue of the F-35, it's my understanding that this is something like the Pentagon is not even pushing for. Like that it doesn't really serve any purpose in their current defense strategy. Do you get the same sense?
Yeah. So it's cost so much money, and it's been behind schedule. It's several years or behind schedule, and so then there's other technology that's keeping up with it, and it's not as effective as some of the other its predecessors before, say like the F-16 or F-22. So they're just trying to Americanize this one jet to do anything and everything, but it's becoming ineffective because it can't do everything at once.
And you know, the point was made that there's a lot of different corporations that have their hands in this, and I think what goes hand in hand with that is this is distributed amongst a lot of different congressional constituencies. So a lot of people feel like, you know, like you said, Bernie Sanders does, like, I have to look out for the jobs in my own community. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is it's a perfect example of the military-industrial complex where parts for, say, this plane or other planes, they're being made in, say, all 50 states. And so when you have something that complicated where it creates thousands and thousands of jobs, but at the same time, the corporations who are profiting from this, say Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, some of those big ones like that, they're spending millions on to make sure this thing gets made and more weapons of war. So it's like we're just preparing for war all the time, and it's at the cost of the taxpayers. It's complicated.
It is. That's why it's called the complex, I guess, huh?
Right.
So what about Martin O'Malley?
Yeah, I would say definitely Martin O'Malley is a very accessible candidate. He gives, here in the Iowa caucus, he does a lot of events, and most of the events do attract, you know, a relatively medium-sized crowd, but he's incredibly accessible, and when it comes to the questions we pose to him, he's been, when it comes to immigrant detention mandate, he spoke against it. And when it comes to our other issues as well, he's spoken against it. But we really want to force him to take a more specific stance on specifically the $1 trillion plan to modernize the nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Yeah, and we probably talked with Martin O'Malley the most out of all of the candidates because he's done so many events, especially in Iowa, because, you know, he's not working right now. He was a retired governor, so he has much more time to get out and talk to everybody, and he stays after late and shakes hands with people, so he's very accessible.
Interesting. And so do you guys have an assessment of, how much of a, I guess you'd call it a ground game, that, you know, the three candidates we've mentioned have so far have in Iowa? In other words, campaign offices and whatnot, are there a pretty significant commitment to Iowa by the three Democratic candidates?
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of, I don't know how many, but there's lots of Bernie offices and Hillary offices scattered throughout. They've been investing hard in Iowa, and I know both of them, they've also had famous people like actors and musicians come to Iowa in this week, and you know, as it's clutch time to get more people out to vote, you know, to caucus for their candidate.
Right. All right. I want to move on to the Republicans, but we're going to take our break really quick, and we'll be back in just a minute with Kevin and Hector from the American Friends Service Committee. Governing Under the Influence Project. We'll be right back.
The history of Syria from the 1940s to the present on Sprouts Thursday at noon.
If you have a car, boat, or truck you no longer need, you can donate it to KKFI, which helps your favorite radio station and gets you a tax deduction. Call Bill at 816-994-7869.
Tent Cities, Society's Failure to House, on Making Contact, Thursday afternoon at 12:30.
All right, here we are back. This is Mike Murphy filling in for Tom Clammer on Tell Somebody this morning, and we're speaking to Kevin and Hector up in Iowa. And it's I really appreciate you guys taking the time, because you guys have to be really, really busy this time of year as we approach the caucus, which is on Monday, right?
Correct. Yeah, I want to say there's about at least 100 presidential events from now and through Monday. Actually, Bernie Sanders is speaking just a few blocks away at this high school, but that's a private event just for high schoolers, but just to say how crazy things get.
Wow. Yeah, that is incredible. It does seem like it keeps you busy. All right, let's talk about some of your interactions with some of the Republican candidates. What about Rand Paul?
Oh, Rand Paul, in regards to campaign style, he does not seem too excited to be running for president. And he is actually, when it comes to asking questions, pretty accessible due to polling lower in the state. And we've been to several of his events. We've asked questions. We've asked him specifically on the immigrant detention mandate. And for him, that should be something important because he's a senator. And he could introduce legislation that would repeal it or legislation that doesn't support it. But at the same time, he doesn't appear to be knowledgeable about the issue. And we're really trying to get him specifically on that issue.
Yeah, I'd also like to mention New Hampshire. So our office there had just trained a group, a bird dog trained a group of veterans. And so one person was able to ask Rand Paul, it was on C-SPAN here, about corporations that are profiting from war and spending money on that, when what he would do to limit the influence of politicians. And so he said that anybody who gets money from government in the form of a contract, they should be limited in what they can get to lobby to get more out of it. So, you know, that's his libertarian view of keeping, you know, limiting and having smaller government. So and it's good to see that Rand Paul has been outspoken about examples within the military industrial complex and about, you know, what's really happening in the Middle East and, you know, the harm and destruction and how much money things are costing. So that's definitely an issue that we've been raising with him as well.
Yeah, okay. Anything else about Rand Paul?
He's actually going to be at Drake University here in Des Moines at 3 o'clock today. So we're going to try and get out to him as well.
Wow. Well, you guys are really busy. And so, again, I have to repeat my gratitude for you taking the time to do this. This is really great. So what about Carly Fiorina? I'm sorry.
We actually talked to her a couple times last night. I talked to her. It was at a small town hall meeting. I asked about the detention quota, and she just kind of referred to talking points like, "Go check out my website. There's more there." The first time I talked to her, it was at the Iowa State Fair, where all these presidential candidates, everybody's there, and they have 20 minutes to talk, and it's just a whole swarm of people and media. But I asked her about crony capitalism in the military-industrial complex and, you know, what she would do to address those issues. So she was a little vague in her answer, but it was kind of cool. There's just cameras all around me, and we're just walking and talking, and you know, she's going to this corn on the cob stand. But and I also want to mention too, all of our or a lot of our bird dog reports or videos or interactions with candidates are on our website at gui.afsc.org. So people want to check that out. There's a lot of substance there.
Yeah, it does seem a lot of interesting stuff. In fact, I was just looking. I saw the thing. I guess it was an Iraq War veteran that that asked Rand Paul about the private contractors, military contractors. I just saw that up there. Anything else about Carly Fiorina?
We did ask her yesterday as well about the revolving door and whether she would have someone in her cabinet who made that transition, and she said no, but then did go back to her talking points afterwards. So we're definitely trying to get the candidates to be more clear on in their answers, but and as we're winding down, we'll continue to push them as well.
Do you feel like so sometimes like what you're trying to do is like get them off script? So rather than just repeat talking points, actually say something that they that less scripted.
Definitely,
yeah.
Because it's yeah, because our questions are so policy oriented and policy shaped that the candidates at times I always feel as if the candidates are kind of taken aback by how pointed our questions are in regards to policy, because it's questions they may not normally hear out here in Iowa. Or may, you know, it might like send off some red flags in their brain thinking this is someone who actually knows what's going on and I don't really want to engage in conversation with them on the issue.
Okay. What about Rick Santorum?
Rick Santorum.
Well, Rick Santorum won the Republican caucus in Iowa in 2012, and so he's been doing tons and tons of events just everywhere this year. So we've talked with him sometimes about, you know, all of our issues, but he's an accessible guy. And I know that he has talked about criminal justice reform and, you know, because that can be a big predecessor with poverty and with, you know, families being, you know, torn apart and going to jail. So we try to tap into that issue with private prisons and with this immigrant detention. So, we have this report. It's called The Role of For-Profit Prison Corporations in Shaping U.S. Immigrant Detention and Deportation Policies. So we had just delivered this to about 13 campaign offices on Monday, and 2 weeks before that, they did the same thing in New Hampshire. So we went to all these presidential offices, you know, explained the situation about the quota, this and that, and the revolving door between these people who are running private prisons and people who used to run, like, the Bureau of Prisons for the government. And, we educate people in that way, too. So that was really cool.
How much coordination is so you two guys are on the ground in Iowa, and you have two counterparts in New Hampshire?
Correct, yes.
And do you folks talk to each other? Like, say, I got Hillary to say this today. I see she's going to be in your area tomorrow or anything like that? Or
yeah, we communicate a lot back and forth, and we have weekly calls. We have other calls on what questions we're going to focus on with different candidates weekly. Things with volunteers, because you know that's how we can get more people to ask more questions. There's a lot of communication between us and Philadelphia and New Hampshire as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. And so Philadelphia, for our listeners, that's American Friends Service Committee headquarters. That's where the office main offices are. What about Marco Rubio?
Hector, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. Marco Rubio, wow. So going to many of his events, in regards to my interactions with him, they've become increasingly, not necessarily negative, but non-productive, because we've asked him multiple times about the detention mandate, and he's somewhat given us responses that are sympathetic and then at the same time not sympathetic. We've asked him in Spanish as well, in which he gave a more sympathetic answer about the immigrant detention mandate. But then the last time I saw him, I tried to follow up with him, specifically question him about campaign contributions he's received from one of the for-profit prison. And he looked at me, smiled, patted me on the arm, and said, "Thanks for coming, man," and then walked off.
Oh, wow.
And as he was walking off, I said, "You didn't answer my question." So, yes, he definitely has become less willing to be to interact with myself.
So he recognizes you when he sees you?
Yeah, I believe he does. And it also doesn't help because demographically, I'm usually the only Latino at these Republican events.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that more candidates haven't recognized me at their events.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely. I do believe Rubio did recognize me in that instance in having interactions with him.
Okay, what about there's a few Latino-esque candidates on the Republican side. What about Ted Cruz?
My interactions with Ted Cruz have been positive only because when we've asked him questions, he does respond, and this was before he started surging in the polls, so he was more accessible. But he'll answer the question at the same time, not actually answer it or only focus on one portion of the question. When we asked him at Drake University about the immigrant detention mandate, he focused more on for-profit prisons profiting off of it than the actual mandate. So he is accessible, or at the beginning he was accessible, and he did take questions, but at the same time he doesn't necessarily answer them. But I will say that his campaign, when it comes to merchandise, it was interesting because he has a pocket constitution with his face on it, and here in Iowa, this is now a collector's item, here in Iowa he has a coloring book that depicts his values and himself and his family's, and you get to color him in as well.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. So does Ted have the best swag out of all the candidates?
In regards to swag, I definitely would put him up there.
Okay. What about anything else about Ted Cruz before we move on?
He does a lot of rural Iowa events, so we haven't been. We aren't all over rural Iowa, so we haven't been able to talk to him as much as we would have liked to.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
So before I move on to the next candidate, you guys are on staff, but you also work with a crew of volunteers to help with this?
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Yes.
Well, that's good. And is that challenging?
It is challenging because some of our issues, they're very important, but they may not be directly here. Like, we don't have a nuclear, factory, right outside of Des Moines where people are all up in arms about that. But at the same time, it can be a little challenging to constantly get people out to these presidential events because, like I just said, there's about 100, until Monday. But just to constantly call and constantly organize to ask people to come to some of these events. And some people don't want to go to certain candidate events because they don't want to sit and listen to some of the rhetoric or some that people are talking about. So it can be a challenge.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And if you're just tuning in, this is Mike Murphy filling in for Tom Clymer on Tell Somebody, and Kevin and Hector are with the American Friends Service Committee's Governing Under the Influence Project up in Iowa, where it's the whole world is focused on Iowa these days. So what about Chris Christie?
Yes, we have talked with him quite a bit between Iowa and New Hampshire. especially about the detention quota, because he has been outspoken about criminal justice as a former prosecutor, so he understands these things. I know that he has some connections between some. There's a halfway house that's a private corporation out in New Jersey, but until recently, he thinks that that this detention quota is a myth, and doesn't think it's real. Or he said we need to be locking more immigrants up and locking more people up in general and deporting people. So that was a little, disheartening to hear. But especially when we're focusing on the money and the influence that these top two prisons, like Corrections Corporation of America and GEO Group, when they've spent $31 million lobbying since 2002. I mean, it's kind of hard. That's a lot of money, and it's hard to just deny those facts. And so we're trying to say, what would you do to stop this influence?
So I saw somebody put together like a montage of different events of Chris Christie being asked questions he'd rather not be asked, and really, like, I don't want to characterize it too much, but really pushing back and coming across as a bully might be a way of saying it. Mm-hmm. And have you guys felt that from him? Has he been kind of mean spirited in his reactions to you, or just indifferent, or what?
So we did have a volunteer try to ask him a question about the military-industrial complex, and he brushed her off by saying, I'll get to that at the town hall. But there actually wasn't a town hall at the event, and he just walked off. And she tried following up with him. He ignored her and continued walking around.
Wow. Okay. Mike Huckabee?
Yeah, I just talked with him at a private round table a couple weeks ago about money in politics, campaign finance issues. And so, yeah, we've talked with him more in Iowa because he won, the Republican side in 08. So he had a private prison when he was governor in Arkansas. He said he found that it wasn't as effective. So that's kind of a positive thing. But, so I talked with him about, he also said that he would ban a revolving door between politicians when they leave Congress, when they leave office, to the private sector or to become lobbyists. He referred to Washington as the Roach Motel, where you go in and then you don't come out. People just stay there. That was kind of funny.
It is pretty funny. And, anything else about Huckabee?
He can play the guitar. That was something myself and a volunteer found out at his last event. He's a pretty good bass player.
Yeah, there was a video online of him jamming with Ted Nugent.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Ben Carson.
He was just at Drake University here in Des Moines. He did a Twitter town hall with BET Network and answered questions using, it was with the hashtag All Votes Matter. So that was just a week ago, I want to say. But I know Hector's talked with him a couple times.
Yes, yeah, I spoke to him at the beginning during the summer. He had a carnival. He had a live band playing. He had princesses there for the children. It was very carnival-like atmosphere. But in regards to the questions we asked him, when I asked him about the detention mandate, he also gave a vague answer, focusing more on prisons and what we can do to keep people out of prisons, not necessarily answering the question.
Okay. Anything else about Ben?
That's a way some people have answered questions, like when they hear the word immigration or they hear the word prison in the question, even though that's not the whole question. They just go off on their talking points about prisons or securing the border.
Yeah, what they've been prepped on to say when those words come up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Jeb Bush, who sometimes likes to tout himself as an honorary Latino? Mm-hmm. What about Jeb?
So he's interesting because we have bird dogged him many times over the past year about the detention quota, and each time he kind of acknowledges and like learns more about it. So he was the first Republican candidate to say that like we should not have this quota, we should not change this policy. So that was big, especially because he was the first one, you know, from the Republican side to say that. So that was great, really great to see.
Oh, that's good. And anything else about Jeb? Any other things to report? Okay. John Kasich.
John Kasich. He's in regards to campaign style and in regards to taking questions, he somewhat lectures in a way. When answering questions, here in Iowa, the question we asked them did focus on the detention mandate solely because in New Hampshire, they've been trying to nail him on that, you know, trying to get him to really pinpoint his stance. And he refused to answer them. So when he came to Iowa, myself and our intern Catherine went and talked to him, but he refused to call on me, so Catherine raised her hand and used her turn to hand the question over to me. So I was able to ask him about the immigrant detention mandate, why he was avoiding the question. He did seem somewhat defensive, like, I'm not really avoiding the question. I just, you know, it doesn't make sense, but I want to make sure I understand both sides. So that was interesting. And I know Kevin saw him as well in a closer setting as well.
Yeah, and so with Kasich, with the detention mandate, like he just says, oh, I got to look at both sides of the issue, but he keeps saying that, like GUI has asked him questions like 15 times, so like he knows what the issues are. We just want him to say what he thinks about it. It's also interesting with Kasich as well because he served in Congress for many years, and he was part of a budget committee, I believe. So he actually limited some of the productions of, say, like this, I think it was some B-2 bombers, because the Pentagon wanted like 130, and he's like, whoa, we don't need all that. That's going to cost a lot of money. So he was able to really see from the inside how much waste there is in the Pentagon and how we don't need, you know, a $300 hammer, right? It shouldn't cost that much. So that's good to see, you know, a Republican being outspoken about some of these issues as well.
Okay. Now, all of those candidates are going to be at the Iowa Events Center. Is that what it's called tonight for the Republican debate? The one will be conspicuous by his absence, and that's Donald Trump. So he's boycotting this event because Megyn Kelly, this is being put on by Fox News, and Megyn Kelly is one of the moderators. Now, Megyn, the last time, kind of asked him a question about his reputation with regard to how he treats women, and he took exception to that, and I think that's why he's not going to appear tonight. Is that what your impression is, too?
Yeah, and I believe he has an event tonight at Drake University at 7 p.m. with the wounded soldiers or something like that, veterans.
Okay, and Kevin, when you and I first started corresponding back on January 15th, you said you went to two Donald Trump events that morning, including one live on MSNBC's Morning Joe. You want to tell us about those events or other interactions with Mr. Trump?
Sure. So, yeah, that morning they filmed They filmed the Morning Joe live from Java Joe's, a coffee shop downtown Des Moines. I woke up at 3:30 to go inside, 3:30 in the morning. Didn't get the opportunity to go inside, so that was a little unfortunate. But so then we went to another event right after that, the Living History Farms. And so we stood outside. We had two of our banners, and we were handing out questions to people, and it was snowing. So, like, we were outside for maybe, like, 3 or 4 hours that whole morning before 9:30 a.m. So we were outside for a while. That was a cold morning. But we haven't had many interactions with Donald Trump just because he's so hard to interact with because so many people, media, you know, lines, he's hard to talk to.
So who's less accessible, him or Bernie Sanders?
I would say Trump.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But we, Eric, who's my position in New Hampshire, he was able to talk to Donald Trump live on TV. That was about a year ago, and was talking about small businesses, you know, not having enough money to be their own lobbyists compared to these rich private contractors. And Trump was just outspoken and just said, like, yeah, lobbyists are bad, you know, just kind of vague. But that was a cool interaction that we had with him.
Yeah, okay. So I think, have I gotten all the candidates or have I missed someone?
It's hard to tell because there's, you know, at the beginning when we started, there's like 30 of them. So
right,
I think we covered most of them.
Right. So, is anyone stand out that's dropped out? Like, I don't know. Like, who's dropped out? Scott Walker dropped out, didn't he?
Yeah, Bobby Jindal.
Right, right. Did you have any interactions with any of those folks?
Yeah, I talked with Scott Walker about Citizens United and, you know, how to change, you know, campaign finance at the local level, too. First words he said was, the Constitution is the Constitution, and then just said to follow the Constitution. Yeah, we've talked with Bobby Jindal quite a few times before he dropped out. Lindsey Graham, like, it was funny with him. I had talked with him in Sioux City, and so two of my ancestors, one signed the Declaration of Independence, the other signed the Constitution. And they were both former governors of South Carolina, where Lindsey Graham is from. So I, like, name-dropped them. And he was just surprised to see young people and gave me a fist bump. And then I'm like, yeah, like, I think they'd agree with you. There's too much money in politics because he's for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. But then I turned it into, you know, Pentagon contractors like Boeing, you know, when they spend millions of dollars, and then he kind of saw where the direction of it was going, but that was just a fun interaction with him.
What about, are there any third parties buzzing around in Iowa, like the Green Party or the Libertarians?
I really haven't heard or seen anything about them in Iowa. We've just been focusing right on the Republican and Democrats.
Okay. So, the conversation we've had this morning, it seems like that some issues you've really been focusing on are the mandatory detention centers for immigrants, the quotas. There's the F-35. There's the $1 trillion nuclear weapon revamping and. I think there was another one that you mentioned a couple times, which I'm drawing a blank on now, but sorry for that Rick Perry moment. I forget the third one.
Oh, he's actually in Iowa. He's supporting Ted Cruz now.
Oh, is that right?
Touring with him, yep.
Oh, that's great. So are there other issues that come up? I know you've also mentioned money in politics. Obviously, that's like a, you know, that's kind of what your project is named after. But anything else that other issues? What's going on in Afghanistan, or you know, the use of drones, or Israel Palestine? Do you guys bring any of these issues up as well?
So As you can tell, we already talk about a lot of issues, and I wish we could have more people raising more issues about things like you just said as well, and it's all related, but, you know, there's only so much we can do and focus on.
So that's the strategy, is to just pick, you know, pick a narrow, you know, a focus on certain issues rather than, you know, all, being all over the place with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's all related. It all has to deal with, you know, militarism and U.S. influence in other countries. And there are corporate factors that are driving all of these policies, and these issues need to come to light as well.
Okay, we just got like 2 minutes left. And any final comments you want to leave our listeners with?
Check out our website, gui.afsc.org. Our hashtag is WhoProfits. There's a lot on Facebook and Twitter about that. See what a lot of these candidates have responded at our website. I'm not sure when do you guys do a caucus or a primary? When does that happen in Missouri?
In Missouri, I think the primary is in March. But then and on the Kansas side, that there is a caucus, and I'm you know, we straddle two states here, so there is a caucus. I think around the same time. I don't have the exact date on that.
Okay. Well, I would encourage people to learn more about these issues that nobody really seems to be knowing about or talking about before they make decisions, or if they want to talk to, there may be detention centers or private prisons or you know, issues within the military industrial complex in your area as well. So you know, it's just good to be educated and aware of what the problems are and how we can move forward with it.
Okay, well, great. Hector and Kevin, I really appreciate all the hard work you guys are doing, and also in fact that in spite of the fact that you're so busy, taking the time to illuminate our listeners, and we really do appreciate that. And I know you've got a lot going on, and you'll probably be outside the debate tonight. Is that right?
Yeah. We plan on being out there, and there will be a lot of other people out there, so we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it, and we'll get this podcast up online shortly. And we're going to go out now with some morning headlines from CPR News. And Hector and Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care now.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.